Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
At some point, Mike, I think on this show, we're going to talk longer about a match than any of the matches actually lasted. This is a talk-heavy show and a show with a lot of matches, but almost all of them 2, 3, 4 minutes long. But it was anchored by two newsworthy WrestleMania impacting, Elimination Chamber impacting segments, including Goldberg coming back to declare himself the number one contender or someone deserving of a title shot. We'll get into that. We also have Ronda Rousey with kind of a weird double red herring before she declared she wants to face Charlotte at WrestleMania. But first, I want to start with Paul Heyman's show opening promo explaining, trying to tie some loose ends, connect the dots, explain the journey he went on over the past month or so, I guess more than a month, going back to day one, where he got fired and Superman punched and then joined Lesnar. Then turned on him and now is a loyal member of the Bloodline. What'd you think of Heyman's explanation, Mike? Did that cover everything that you had in terms of questions and curiosities about how this would be explained retroactively?
I think it was pretty good by WWE standards, because by those standards, I kind of think we shouldn't expect much of anything. We shouldn't expect much of any acknowledgement. That's kind of the general standard if Paul Heyman is involved, and I'm not sure to what degree he's involved firsthand anymore at this point. But tonight made me feel like he has some direct involvement with it, because it made any sense. You know what I mean? That they didn't completely brush things under the cover, especially when weeks and weeks have passed. Like, that's the point of no return for a lot of WWE events, and thinking back on them and what impact they'll have down the line. So, it was pretty brief, and I think it's a pretty decent fallback for, and it's really believable coming from Heyman and his delivery, that he kind of falls back on, I made a terrible mistake, and you kind of buy into it. So, yeah, not terrible, and again, better than I would expect from WWE.
Was there anything that just didn't quite make sense as Heyman explained it?
I mean, I still guess I don't know why he threw the belt between the two of them back then.
I wonder if he didn't bring that up because an explanation would draw attention to something that an explanation wouldn't fully solve. But I think he could have kind of gotten away with it if he, because the explanation here is that he really was trying to protect Reigns from Lesnar, and that he did believe that in his heart. And he's saying, my heart was wrong. Lesnar's the one who needs to be protected from Reigns. He could, I think, have used that conflicted mindset and the fact that he spent 20 years with Lesnar, but his loyalty lies with Reigns, to explain that. We've been talking about that moment not making sense. And Todd Martin on The Fix, I think, did a really good job explaining, you know, why it felt just completely unexplainable. If Heyman was on one side or the other, and even if he wasn't, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So, but I don't know that that's on the forefront of the average viewer's mind. And so I think picking up from day one and the time frame of him being fired and Superman punched, I think he checked the boxes for me. I'm curious to get, you know, feedback from you and callers and emailers if anything else jumps out. But the idea that Heyman addressed that he was speaking from the heart, and he's not going to deny that that was the truth. You know, and he said, my goal wasn't to make Lesnar look foolish, but he did look foolish. I don't know. You know, I was watching that. I'm like, I felt pretty satisfied. And impressed with what Heyman was able to do with a storyline that played out differently than, and he has influence on this. He and Roman have talked about that they talk on the phone every week and work stuff out. It doesn't mean it always gets on the air the way they want it. You know, it is Vince McMahon we're talking about, and there have been some unexpected changes. But to take this curveball that they were throwing and had to deal with for 4 weeks, and I think they worked it out pretty well. I think that the detour they went on, I think most of what we saw tonight is a speech he would have given the Friday after day one. And I do believe, and I've been given reason to believe, that pretty much what happened at the Royal Rumble, but in the course of a different match, would have happened on that date, at day one, had the Reigns-Lesnar match happened. Mike, any additional thoughts on that?
You can trust Paul Heyman if you give him a chance to, all right, we need to reel this back in and pull it together. He's the guy. He's got doubt in the future, and he's got what has already happened committed to memory, and he can pull it together as good as anybody. And I even liked, I think there were some subtle nonverbal reactions from Roman as Heyman was kind of recounting recent events and where Heyman felt he had took missteps, and
yeah,
Reigns looked a little disgusted when he would talk about Brock and how, you know, at the time I felt this about Brock and how he was dangerous to you. And it almost had me wondering, is Reigns going to put up with that even? But it came back round to being accepted. I feel that's how it felt to me. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to, you know, put a little more thought into it and kind of, you know, map out in my head, but you know, we've had a lot of time to talk about it and think about it. And I felt like it was a pretty steep hill to climb to explain why Heyman was with Lesnar. I don't think he specifically, and not that it's his role to do so, said that Lesnar, like, where do we stand on Lesnar playing mind games with him and Reigns? Because he didn't bring up, like, you know, Brock, you know, I didn't appreciate you making it seem like I was working with you or that I was pulling strings behind the scenes for you until I did. Like, was that part missing? Because Lesnar certainly liked to mind F Reigns and Heyman, but I guess we're supposed to think that was just Lesnar messing around trying to create trouble. But Heyman wasn't really a double agent at any point. It simply was when Reigns turned on him. He was like an unemployed Oklahoman, as he put it, and he just went back to Lesnar because that was sort of his, you know, safe landing. But then the journey was, his loyalty really was with Reigns. So he didn't address, but I guess maybe it's implied or assumed now that Lesnar was not, that Heyman was not working with Lesnar when he said. Is that your take on this also?
I don't really have a take on what Lesnar's involvement was yet, and they have time to establish that if they want to, with exactly what Lesnar thinks with how all of this went down with Paul. So I'm going to wait and see on that, and I actually mean that in a positive way, not in the way where I think they're really screwing something up badly. And as an excuse, I say, well, let's wait and see. I want to hear from Brock and get his take.
I don't know if we're going to get it. Like, I mean, part of me thinks they're just going to move on. Well, I guess, I mean, once they get around to hyping Reigns versus Brock, if that happens, and I'm very confident it's going to be happening here, then I would expect there to be some exchange in the flow of conversation where Lesnar could just go, Paul, you know, did you like how I messed with you and Reigns and you know, planted, you know, whatever. I mean, he'll work out the wording better, but planted seeds of doubt with you guys. Or even more so, Lesnar won't admit that. He'll go, Paul, one thing I didn't hear you say is how you were working on my behalf when you were claiming to be loyal to Roman, like, and continue on that path of messing with Heyman and Reigns, and complain to you what you noticed, which is Reigns really fully, truly trusting of Heyman at this point. And Lesnar could actually go back to that, and then maybe that's when Heyman explains, no, this is not anything that I was part of.
Yeah, even in spite of Heyman's involvement and his mind for this game and this business, I don't know if the company will want to go as deep as they could with what everybody was thinking at what point. So they might just go straightforward with kind of a more generic feud with Lesnar and Reigns without getting that from Brock. But I would, like I said, I would like to hear from something from Brock along these lines. And they have time between now and then, obviously, to address that. And that's something worth addressing.
Very much. Okay. Let's pause, introduce ourselves, because we've got a lot of people on hold who want to join this conversation, and you can also get in line. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, February 4th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter since the late 1980s, and also the website pwtorch.com since 1999, and also the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast and Post Shows, and a variety of VIP exclusive shows each week, including the Wade Keller Hotlines, post pay-per-view and PLE, post-event roundtables, and the Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, and our Focus on AEW and Focus on WWE series also. Lots of stuff available just for VIP members, so go VIP if you want to hear everything that I'm involved in the great work the whole team at PW Torch VIP do throughout the week on podcasts and exclusive written content. Full details at pwtorch.com/Go VIP. The other voice you hear is Mike Myers, longtime contributor to pwtorch.com, our website. He writes WWE main event TV reviews and also kickoff show, WWE PLE kickoff show reports. Mike, welcome back. Always great to have you in the co-host chair.
Thank you, Wade. It's good to be back.
Excellent. So I will give out the phone number and invite if you're live streaming our show here about 15 minutes after SmackDown ended. Just give us a call if you are live streaming us and want to get in on the conversation. The phone number is 347-215-8558. Again, that's 347-215-8558. When you call, please push 1 on your keypad, and that flags you on our switchboard so that we know you aren't just listening but actually want to be brought onto the show. The other option to participate is email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. All right, let's get to some calls here. We will begin with, let's see here. The numbers just moved around a little bit on the switchboard. We're going to begin with Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland tonight. Ryan, you were first up. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
I have a question about Bill Goldberg. You think this will be his last match and possibly his retirement match, or you think he'll get an AEW or maybe just have one more Royal Rumble match?
How do you feel about him, Ryan, by the way, Goldberg at this point? Still a special attraction, or is it a little played out, or does it depend on the context?
I really enjoy Goldberg myself. I think he looks like a star, and there just really aren't a lot of stars in WWE now, so I think he really helps the product myself.
Mike, how do you feel?
I don't really. I won't disagree that he looks great, and he looks like a star, any of that, but I don't find his matches compelling, and especially when he swoops in out of nowhere, declares a match himself, and that's it. Like, that's how it starts. Like, there's no grudge or... They barely mentioned, you know, that he had a match scheduled with Reigns like a couple of WrestleManias ago, and then it didn't happen. Like, they barely even touched that, and that would at least be a good jumping off point. So, I don't know, just injecting Goldberg doesn't do a whole lot for me in particular.
Yeah. I think to answer your question, Ryan, Goldberg had said that he had one more match left on his deal. After SummerSlam, he had two matches with Lashley, right? And then, I think he's on record saying that there's one match left. So I think this will be his last match, unless WWE decides to pay him to come back again. I'm ready to not have Goldberg part of WWE storylines. So I don't think the crowd reaction is what it once was, and I think it's. I mean, obviously, there's a star aura for all the things that he's been involved in and the way that he's portrayed and all that. But he's lost a lot. He's old. He's not great on the microphone. His promos have been up and down, mostly down, in my opinion. and just, you know, growling, you're next. It's just, that's not what I look for in wrestling. You know, I mean, like, it's just, I think that's played out. So for me personally, I mean, I get there's a star aura, but I didn't sense the crowd went bonkers for him. The announcers did. They're paid to. And I don't really like the idea of WWE sidetracking, say, Big E, and putting him in a tag team with Kofi again on SmackDown with some unexplained move from Raw to SmackDown, and then give Goldberg, you know, this prominent spot instead. And I'm not saying it makes sense for Big E to go and lose to Roman Reigns at Elimination Chamber, but I'd rather have that storyline than Goldberg just walk out and suddenly gift himself a title match because he declares Reigns is next. They tried to cover that a little bit by saying the match was not scheduled, but I didn't know that if a match is scheduled and gets canceled, that the wrestler who was going to get a title shot gets to just show up and declare when they get a match. So I thought it was a lame explanation, and they're just leaning on this being a special attraction match. Goldberg will make his, you know, millions of dollars for his trips to Saudi Arabia, and his kid's going to be financially set. But, you know, I don't know that this is exciting for me to cover again. And so I'm kind of hoping this is it. WWE might think there's value in him. I'd rather, if Goldberg's going to come back, Mike, I'd rather have him not walking into the ring and getting world title shots. Like, having him be a tag partner for an up-and-coming babyface who needs help against two heels, and he's kind of in that special attraction, you know, upper mid-card role. To me, I'd rather see that than him at the very top of the card. I just don't think there's a lot of believability that he's going to win the title. So, you know, what's the point?
Absolutely. I'm not, like, vehemently opposed to Goldberg showing up, especially for, well, whatever you want to call the Saudi shows. But a special attraction, you know.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with having that. But he just strutted in and made his own match with the top guy in the company. And that displaces other guys. And Ryan said it brings star power to the shows. But that's kind of the crime here, and it's the bigger problem, is that with so much talent so many talented wrestlers in the world, and right in this company, right on this roster, they're going to Goldberg. And that's a running theme with this company, is that they roll out, like, former megastars, and they've got none in the chamber, like or in the magazine behind him, you know? So it's tricky, because they're only ever super interested in a few people at once.
Yeah.
And the rest end up taking the back seat to guys like Goldberg tonight.
Yep. All right, Ryan, we did a lot of talking there. Any follow-up on that or a new topic?
Follow-up on that topic is, how much does the Prince of Saudi Arabia have on these, like, matches? Like, is he still, like, in control of saying, like, who Roman wrestles? Like, maybe he's a big fan of Goldberg, and they really have their hands tied on that. Do you know anything about that?
I don't think the Saudi prince or royal family get to book the card. I think WWE is just kind of going, hey, would you like this guy? And, you know, oh, yeah, I like Goldberg's great. You know, okay, well, how about this? Okay, yeah, that's great. I mean, I think some of it is playing to, you know, the fan perspective of people in the Saudi royal family that's been, you know, talked about, rumored about, reported, but I don't think it comes down to, like, you know, I don't think it gets down to micro booking specific matches. However, they're paying WWE enough money that if that was part of the deal, you know, the WWE would go, sure. And I think that's part of what, you know, upsets people about, and rightfully so. I mean, there's lots of things to be upset about when it comes to WWE and, you know, the you know, basically this blood, as it's been dubbed, blood money events. With the track record of Saudi Arabia and taking this ungodly, out-of-proportion sum of money for bot-guaranteed shows that originally was designed to try to make, you know, to make Saudi Arabia seem more mainstream in the world, despite government, if we even call them a government, their policies not being palatable with an otherwise free society that they're trying to fit in with. I mean, they're record on LGBTQ issues just alone is shameful. And the WWE's tried to make the women's revolution this sort of feel-good story in Saudi Arabia, and that got derailed with the whole Jamal Khashoggi slaughter that the Crown Prince has been credibly determined to have been part of. So it's just, it's always, it's just, you know, it's not fun to talk about. It is what it is. And now it's, their shows are even bigger because with the Peacock deal, Mike, the Saudi shows are replacing what would have been a pay-per-view. But, you know, fans can't go. You know, there's some fans out there probably went to every Elimination Chamber match. They love going. They traveled. And now it's like, you can't go there. You can't go see these shows because they got bought by a big government. So, you know, Vince McMahon can have another private jet and another vacation home and, you know, whatever. It just, it feels like something was taken away from the fans due to greed.
Yeah, and it's, nothing about it feels normal. And I know a lot of big wrestling fans won't watch it and will never watch it on the principle of everything you've just been talking about. And you can talk at length about what is wrong with the deal, but there's a lot of money involved. So that changes a lot of people's minds when that's placed in front of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's weird.
All right. Ryan, any closing words for you?
Okay, my final question is on Ronda Rousey. Do you know who actually helps her with the promos? Because I looked at the producer list and, you know, the names seem pretty weak on promos. Like Billy Kidman, it's not like, you know, they have Blackjack Lanza there anymore helping these guys and girls with the promos.
You know, I have heard Paul Heyman is friends with Ronda and he's worked with her. Natalya was among the people who worked with Ronda early on. You know, she's had different influences over time, but ultimately it just comes down to the writing team. I don't know, tonight, for instance, who specifically was tasked with her, but Vince McMahon pays very close attention, Mike, to his top stars. And, you know, Ronda tonight didn't seem as petulant as she has since her appearance at the Royal Rumble. She, you know, I mean, no one's buying her smiling and slapping hands with fans, but at least they convinced her to go through the motions. We haven't talked much about her performance tonight, but what do you think about how she came across tonight compared to Monday? And to Ryan's specific point, what do you think about the words or the bullet points that, well, probably mostly specific words that she's being scripted to say?
She looked like she had been seriously coached about her entrance. Tonight, the way she came down the ramp,
yes.
Kind of a beaming smile, high-fiving the fans. It looked like it was totally put on, you know. It reminded me of back in the 90s, there was an episode of Saturday Night Live hosted by Jeff Daniels, and part of the bit he did during his monologue was sort of coming out and verbally going through the things you're supposed to do as a host as you make your entrance for your monologue. And it's like, come through the doorway. All right. Celebrity skip. And then smile at the audience. Train seal. And that's what he's really clapping really demonstratively. And
funny.
That's what it felt like Rousey was doing tonight. Like, beam at the fans. Oh, go to the side. Give a kid a high five while smiling. Then she got into the ring, and I don't think she seemed definitely babyface leaning. Like, it didn't feel, even if that was put on, it. I don't think she did anything really contemptible tonight. I think her promo in the ring with Charlotte was fine. The stuff with Becky and Sonya Deville, I thought was pretty weird. Ronda, as far as Ronda went, I thought she was fine.
What's your take on what they did there? Like, with the red herrings that Becky claims that Ronda picked her, and then Charlotte throws out a Sasha match, which is dangerous, by the way, because they're offering two specific matches that people might like better than what seems to be what they declared they're going to do instead, which is Charlotte against Ronda and Becky against someone else. Usually WWE doesn't do that. What was the point of the red herring of Becky claiming that she was going to face her?
Who knows what they were thinking? Because it's not clear enough, you know, what they want everyone to think. Like, maybe what they wanted was everyone in the audience and everyone at home to really be clamoring for Rousey and Charlotte. And then they get these lesser options that they're like, oh, okay, well, still cool. But then they end up getting the big thing that they hopefully really wanted most of all. I don't know.
That's dangerous with Sasha. Sasha is popular.
Yeah.
I mean, more popular than Ronda Rousey. I mean, if you polled WWE up, everybody who watched SmackDown tonight, everybody who watched Raw on Monday, and they all had to push a button, one person has to go, one person stays. Do you keep Sasha or keep Ronda? I mean, Sasha wins overwhelmingly. Yeah.
Big time. And her return at the Rumble with that pretty wicked outfit, you know, it's a big splash, and people are definitely ready for her to be back. Maybe the weirdest part, and I hate to tell two stories in such rapid succession here, but it was when Deville said, okay, Charlotte, she's in the ring with Charlotte. I've spoken to Becky Lynch, and Becky Lynch told me that Ronda Rousey picked her to main event WrestleMania. So according to Becky, they're going to do a contract signing and all of that. And it's like the most unreliable secondhand bit of information you could possibly deliver, you know,
right.
Like,
yep.
Like when I worked in grocery retail, I had a stupid running gag where I would tell like good friends that work with me, oh, hey, the manager, Nick, I talked to him like 10 minutes ago. He said he wants you to unload the grocery truck today. And he also said, don't ask him about it. So just,
oh, I love it.
And it was too stupid.
Yeah.
That was the point. And that's what it felt like, you know?
Wow.
So I don't know what that in particular was about. And it was dismissed pretty quickly when Charlotte then named Sasha and so on.
Yeah. Okay. We'll keep rolling through calls here. 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad if you want to join the conversation. We will go next to Jay in Michigan. Jay, good to hear from you. What did you think of SmackDown tonight? What stood out?
Well, I would say what stood out to me was what you guys were talking about at the top of your show, which was at the top of SmackDown show, about the whole Roman Reigns, Paul Heyman dynamic getting back together. Like, I think we can all agree that this, in all likelihood, would have been the outcome of the day one match, which at that time I think it would have made a little more sense. But once the train of events took place where, you know, Roman got COVID, Brock won the title, et cetera, like, you know, if once that happened, I felt like I really wanted them to just go title for title and then maybe do the ultimate outcome of what happened with Paul screwing him over, just do that at WrestleMania. That's what I would have, you know, went with at that particular moment in time, just because, you know, him screwing him over at the Rumble, I guess, like, I just look at it like, what did Roman necessarily gain from costing Brock the title, even though I guess he did go win the Rumble. But, you know, it just kind of seemed a little – it just seemed a little disjointed, probably because it was for my liking. But, you know, Paul did, as Mike said, Paul broke it down and explained it about as best as you can possibly explain it. So,
yeah.
You know, we'll go from there. But the only thing I would really want to say is that, man, you know, SmackDown since the draft has just not been a good show to me. You know, a lot of times I'm at work during the show. So I'm kind of like catching it, and you know, like last year, I'm trying to catch every minute I can. But this year, I pretty much know if Roman's opening the show, I just catch the opening of the show, and then I catch the end of the show, and everything else in between just really feels like filler to me. So, you know, I'm just not a big fan of SmackDown as a whole right now. I just think that they really gutted the show, and I don't necessarily understand why they did that. But, you know, that's really my take, man. I don't think that there was very much to the show with the exception of the opening segment. So, you know, where you guys stand on that belief?
Mike, start with that.
Before that, I just want to mention the specific thing Jay mentioned about what were their motivations in interfering with that Lashley match and Lesnar's match at Royal Rumble and Paul did address that very briefly, and I know that Jay kind of acknowledged this, but he said that there won't be a title versus title match because that's what Lesnar wanted, and Lesnar doesn't get what he wants anymore. So it's kind of just like a personal screw you to Lesnar. If this was your plan, we just derailed it, and they're heels, you know, so that's the sort of behavior you might expect. So I appreciate that touch that they addressed it at all, albeit very briefly. As for SmackDown, I don't know. I do think it's less intriguing than it was, say, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago. But it was always, since Reigns went heel and aligned with Paul Heyman and that kind of what might be an iconic shot now in pro wrestling when they revealed the alliance with Reigns' alliance with Heyman. That was the highlight far and away of every show, and it almost carried the show, and I don't feel that it really does that anymore. I've said this in other post shows that I've been on, but kind of some of the allure has worn off a bit for where they all started with Reigns, and for that, SmackDown suffers. It's not terrible, but it's just not as good as it was. And Jay also mentioned the kind of the reformation of the Bloodline. I like seeing them all together again. I like seeing Roman alone is not ideal. And I like seeing Roman with the belt and the Usos with the tag belts and Heyman doing most of the talking. And I think that's cool. So maybe there'll be an uptick in the interest with that group kind of reunited. But that's kind of what I think about the show.
Yeah, I think this was a 2-segment show. I mean, obviously, they bookended Reigns, Heyman, and Usos, and you know, reacting to Lesnar, and then Ronda and Charlotte and Sonya Deville getting in there. And I mean, it was, you know, having Ronda get a little physical with Sonya, but not Charlotte, I think, was smart. And then, you know, you had some stuff with Sammy and Johnny Knoxville and the title match, a couple title matches set up, and I see title match in 2 weeks and Naomi Charlotte the next week. I think they added enough to the middle of the show where it's not completely just a throwaway. But no question, it was it was just one, two, three, 4-minute match after another. Not a lot that felt consequential. Although, I mean, Drew McIntyre, I mean, we can kind of roll our eyes at the idea that he's going to face Madcap Moss at Elimination Chamber and that this is what Drew is doing. But I thought, we haven't talked about it yet, but I thought Drew had a good promo. You know, he addressed being in there with Lesnar, and he kind of, you know, just said, hey, I'll deal with him again later, but right now I have to deal with these two clowns. And I thought he looked good and carried himself with authority in that. So I don't know. I mean, and, you know, they forwarded the Natalia, Leah thing. There enough happened in the middle of the show, even if it's not major stuff, that I can see where they sat down, looked at the script and said, there's enough here to satisfy people who stick with us from the Lesnar Heyman segment to the Ronda Charlotte segment. Mike, do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, the secondary or tertiary parts were fine, I guess. A little disappointed to see McIntyre return with the sword. I feel like any promo or segment Drew does is probably increased in quality by 20 to 30% if you would remove the sword and all that goes along with it in terms of commentary, talking about it the way that they do. It's like they just love this sword or this Scottish claymore, as I guess you might call it. My first thought when Drew returned was, well, they could use some more big talent. And then I was a little disappointed when they went kind of back where they left off. But it makes sense because of Drew explained it. Like he's angry at the clowns and he's going to exact his revenge. So yeah. I'm fine with that, especially when it's on, that's going to be at the Elimination Chamber in Saudi Arabia. So kind of whatever, you know, and my guess
sometimes
is maybe.
Sometimes it seems like they're trying to trick, going back to Ryan's question, they're trying to trick the, I have to whisper this, they're trying to trick the Saudi Arabian family into thinking they're getting really big matches when they're not. You know, like Goldberg isn't a big deal, I don't think, anymore. And you know, Madcap Moss, as you're talking about, Mike, against Drew, that's not a big match. But, you know, are they paying enough attention to know? Or may, I mean, I don't know. We're just, you know, it's conjecture if they care to this micro level. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you to make that point. But Drew and Madcap, it's like they're giving a lot of TV time. And you can imagine somebody who doesn't follow WWE closely thinking that's a big match, even though, you know, it's not.
I just censored myself, I think. I'll skip that joke, and I'll just say they'll probably
you can
move
you can email
to,
it to me.
Yeah, I might do that. They'll probably move on to Corbin next, maybe even at WrestleMania, which would kind of be a disappointment. But I'm fine with the way Corbin came back in hindsight. And I especially liked Naomi's backstage thing, talking about the lesser segments on tonight's show. Naomi backstage with DeVille and how she carried herself talking to DeVille and Pierce, and how she talked to them differently. And, man, she had some serious authority and confidence, and I really liked it. It wasn't that of somebody who's been pushed around. It was really cool. And in her dismissiveness of her boss, DeVille, was really good. So that part stood out to me.
Yeah. All right, I'll go back to Jay. Jay, any follow-up?
Nah, man, that's really all I got, outside of the fact that I just hate to see what's happening with Big E. You know, we all kind of internally had that fear that he wouldn't, you know, do – he would basically get Kofi'd, and unfortunately that's what happened. You know, I thought that he might – I thought that he'd recover and bounce back, but it just seems like he's, you know, just back into the tag ranks. I mean, maybe they'll tell a longer story. I am finally personally to the point where I'm tired of seeing the New Day together. Not that, you know, I guess I was fine when E was out doing his solo thing and the New Day as a tag team was still remaining like they never had to split, but – now just E going back, it just I hate to see that, man. I hate to see that for E because I felt like he was doing a great job. His legs just got cut from under him, and you know, I could definitely do without Goldberg again, you know. But he is Mr. Blood Money, so you know he definitely gonna go get that bag, and they definitely gonna give it to him. So that's all I got, guys. Thanks for taking my call, man. You guys have a good night.
All right, great. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it. All right, we'll go next to William in San Diego, and then on deck, Sean in Murfreesboro. William, thanks for calling. What do you think of SmackDown?
Hey, guys. Pretty much in agreement with you guys. That was bookended by two pretty newsworthy segments, and then all the middle stuff was kind of, you know, just there. Wasn't, like, terrible or anything. Want to touch back on the Ronda Rousey stuff. I know a lot of people online would probably prefer Becky versus Ronda, but I'm actually happy with Charlotte versus Ronda for now. Assuming that this isn't just a one-off and that we're never going to see Ronda again after this one, because I just don't feel like if we did Becky versus Ronda right now, that it would, like, you know, have that full potential, reach the full potential of that match. I just think that, you know, Becky's doing the heel thing and she's kind of lost a little from doing that. I think it would take a little while to build up some of that babyface goodwill. And people are, you know, as we've seen in the last couple appearances from Ronda, people are willing to cheer her. So in my fantasy booking ideal scenario, I would have Ronda beat Charlotte at WrestleMania, do like a whole – year of Ronda just like dominating the SmackDown women's division. And, you know, maybe by next year, people will, it'll be like history repeating itself and people will grow tired of Ronda again. And, maybe parallel to that, you can do like a redemption story with Becky where she loses the title to, I guess someone like Bianca and, you know, she goes on a redemption arc. Do you think that would be plausible? Can they even capture some of that same magic they had back in like 2018?
Mm. Is it too late for that, Mike, with the direction they've chosen?
Maybe. I mean, anything's possible. The first thing I thought of, I mean, is, well, for one, is that I hate long-term fantasy booking or thinking about things that far in advance, because I don't feel that the company even does that. So I definitely don't bother. I don't do that with any company. But I don't know what Ronda's like contractor schedule is going to look like. So if you're proposing, if William proposes that she kind of runs through a roster for a year, I don't know what that can look like, because she might have like three or four more appearances scheduled. And in that event, it's, she's almost at that special attraction stage. So I don't know that they can do that way. It kind of seems unlikely, especially that she doesn't seem to, like, love this business so much as see it as a curio that pays pretty well, you know? So
she kind of throws that in everyone's face.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much of that in WWE. I don't know if so much maybe is overstating it, but Goldberg, it's like, you know, I'm here because I want my son to see me wrestle. Oh, okay, but that's not really a storyline. Like, that's not real. Like, you should be here because you want to prove you're the best wrestler. We're not paying money so that your, you know, teenage son, you have the satisfaction of your teenage son seeing you wrestle. Like, I mean, that can be a positive with the right storyline, but it can't be the sole reason you want to wrestle. It's some meta thing about I never thought this would happen, but my son's old enough to see this and it'll be great for him. Because, you know, everybody loves their own kids, but wrestling fans don't watch wrestling to watch their wrestlers make their teenage sons have really cool moments. Like, that's just not a hook. That's just really self-centered, and it's just not enough. It can be part of it, but it's not enough. And so with Goldberg, it just shows up and it's like, you're next. And it's like, well, what's your mission? What do you want? Do you want to win a world title again? Are you not even going to say that because it's not believable? And so with Ronda, and then you have her, you know, all my perspective changed and I didn't fly my baby in a nice storm to talk, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's just, I don't get excited about wrestlers who can't be bothered to just immerse themselves in the universe of storyline and instead are like, you know, too good for it or just unaware of it, or they have the pull and the power to not be cajoled into or ordered into saying something that feels like the typical viewer is going to be more invested. You know, I there's just too many people who are around because they're stars who get paid a lot. And I know it's a star-driven business, Mike, but it's also a business driven by a lot of other things, including people like Big E, who fans saw, you know, and Kofi, who saw that they've been with him on this long journey, and they finally get a chance, and then it just gets taken away, and without explanation, he's on a different show wrestling and tag teams again. Like, I think that hurts a lot to take the full-time people that fans are invested in and just sort of discard them because they get displaced by stars of the past or people who made their name elsewhere. Johnny Knoxville and Bad Bunny being in the Battle Royal. I mean, I get why WWE does it. I'm not saying I would have voted strongly against it, because I get that WWE is in the business of making headlines and having crossover celebrities and all that, but it gets to be too much. And Rousey and Goldberg's, you know, being back on top, it's not exciting to me when they present themselves the way that they have. And I know Rousey, you know, gets points for effort tonight, but I mean, no one's buying it if they paid attention to, you know, her interviews last weekend and Monday.
Yeah. And my question is, do people like Ronda and Goldberg have the pull to like veto certain scripting ideas that would sell general fans on the match better, but those ideas would require them to say things that they personally don't believe in, which, by the way, is acting. Like, that's kind of what acting is.
Right, yes.
But are they presented with better pitches and scripting than what we see? Not that the scripting was terrible tonight, but just,
yeah.
And I don't know to what extent Goldberg can, you know, do a promo beyond.
Yeah, that's
you, you've addressed that already. Yeah. But what little he does do, like, say when he was talking about his kid and wanting like, I used to be a big deal, and it turns out I can still get in the ring, so now I want my kid to see me. Couldn't that the same energy that went into that just say something more productive that is more of a fight feel? And if so, why didn't it happen? And is it because they feel that they're above that as a performer? Like, they – Goldberg kind of comes more from pro wrestling than Ronda does. So, but
barely.
Well, I mean and she also comes from UFC, which has its own degree of, you know, performative aspects to it for sure. But I just don't know why they don't angle them when they're on, because when she goes off and does interviews, it's like, well, you're kind of screwed. She's going to do her own thing, full stop. But when they're on air, doesn't the company have some more control to at least do something more about the fight?
I mean, with Goldberg, I think they just know, you know, how limited he always has been on the microphone. You know, if you give him a lot of material, it just, you might not get the results that you're envisioning. And there's all kinds of reasons behind that. But with Ronda, you're just getting a really quirky personality. I mean, just, she's just, you can say something. I mean, backstage you go, here's what we want you to say. And I mean, she'll just, like, I could imagine her just looking at the person presenting it going, no, I don't feel that. You know, like the old, you know, Hogan in WCW Nitro era, not feeling it. Like, I mean, what are you going to say to her? You know, she's not, I don't know what words, Mike, to describe her. She's not typical. Her personality and her approach to logic and interacting with people, just, you know, it's not typical. And so when you combine that with the leverage that she has, and her star power and how WWE treats her and how the network executives, again, who might not know who Big E is, but they know who Ronda Rousey is, so much. I mean, this just gets to the big macro issue I have with WWE right now, which is so much of what matters is not booked for the wrestling fans. It's booked to placate people who don't watch the show. You know, it's booked to placate the Saudi royal family. It's booked to placate executives at Fox. Remember when TNA would, like, get suggestions from people at Spike of what to do? And I'm like, stop that. You're paying for a wrestling program because you didn't start your own company, because you think the people running a wrestling company can do a better job than you can starting it up. So, like, get out of the way. You know, it's like, you know, Jerry Jones deciding who's going to be the starting quarterback. No, you hired a coach to do that, or a GM to help decide that. And so much of what WWE does, it feels driven. And I understand a lot of what they do is, hey, big stars draw. And I get that that's a real proven ingredient, but they don't balance that out by doing a good job genuinely pushing the people who fans have more of a connection with. And WWE is so built now around trying to just make it seem, you know, Jimmy Smith being hired, you know, like, he just wasn't ready when they put him on the air, but he came from MMA. So that'll impress the USA Network executives that, you know, we haven't shortchanged them because Pat McAfee, a crossover sports podcast celebrity, radio celebrity, is on the other show. So now we got Jimmy Smith. And before that, it was Adnan, who was ESPN baseball guy. Like, they make these decisions not because it's best for fans. So many decisions they make is just to try to buy themselves time and create this veneer of being big time and legitimate. And it doesn't lead, I don't think, to a better product. I'd rather have a better storyline with Big E than Goldberg. And, you know, and I don't know what Ronda Rousey is displacing, and I'm not saying don't involve her, but it comes with some peril. It comes with some drawbacks, as we've experienced with her, you know, kind of prickly personality. So anyway, that's my take. William, back to you.
Yeah, wanted to move on to Brock. I know he technically wasn't on the show, so I don't know if this counts as a Raw question or a SmackDown one. But I feel like a lot of people are being dismissive of the whole idea that he could actually become WWE champion at the Elimination Chamber. And personally, I wouldn't put it past WWE. Like, I know they would be shooting themselves in the foot if they take one title away from one show, and now because they're going to be doing two nights of WrestleMania, so it wouldn't make sense to not have one title defended one night and the other defended the other night. But I don't know. I just wouldn't put it past them to make that choice to maybe give some more oomph or importance to that Roman and Brock Lesnar match from their perspective. I'm not saying I would advocate for it, but I can see their perspective how they would come to that conclusion. So in that hypothetical, how do you guys think the crowd will react? Because he won the Royal Rumble, and he got cheered, but I sense that there were, like, a few grunts here and there, like maybe a few people being like, again? So I don't know. If we were all of a sudden was WWE champion, how do you guys think people will react?
Well, I think part of what happened at the Rumble, and some of this is tied to the Shane McMahon story, which I talked about in detail on my VIP Keller Hotline 2 days ago now, I guess, because I had a lot of just kind of firsthand details on that combined with some other reporting. And I just think things were in disarray behind the scenes with Shane, Shane's involvement in kind of rearranging some things. So I don't know. I don't know that what went on with Shane, what that changed in the final few wrestlers that Lesnar eliminated. But when you have Randy Orton coming out for a big pop because he's in his hometown and Lesnar eliminates him, and Lesnar's eliminating, you know, Drew McIntyre, who's a babyface, and Shane McMahon, who's, you know, babyface, at least till this week, in some minds. I mean, it's just like Lesnar just eliminated a bunch of, like, people that fans kind of liked. So I think that kind of played into a finish. And I you know, put out there, I think on that same VIP hotline, an alternative scenario that I think, you know, would have worked better to getting the desired pop that they had. But that would have required, you know, planning ahead and not having the disruption that was Shane McMahon. Although in Shane's defense, I've heard from people in WWE directly about the women's match being a mess too, and Shane wasn't part of that. So some of this just falls on WWE being less organized than usual.
For the record, Wade Keller just said, in Shane's defense. Mark it down.
Hey, I'm fair. Even if it's like, you know, 70% or 97% negative about something, if that's what it deserves, it's fair.
Okay.
But I'm not going to exclude that time here and there when, you know, it reflects more positively, or at least in absence of negativity. So I say all that because I wouldn't read into the crowd reaction to the Rumble when it comes to Reigns. They had Lesnar, because Lesnar spent a month on TV with Paul Heyman, who fans see as a have been conditioned to believe as a big sleazebag, and Lesnar just welcomed him back, and they never really explained it because they were just buying their time until they could kind of get to what they wanted to do January 1st, and get to what they did tonight. And so we had this filler that didn't make sense. And so it's a bit of a mulligan, and I think Lesnar will be fine. So I'm not worried about that. So you can react to that, Mike, but what do you think about the chances are that we get Lesnar, Reigns in a title versus title match? I mean, it's sort of like Charlotte talks about, I'm going to face Sasha. Like, do you want to put a match out there that might seem like a bigger deal than what they end up going with instead, if they go with something else instead? So what do you think WrestleMania is going to be when it comes to Lesnar and Reigns?
I kind of like the idea of title versus title just because it's a little unique, and it opens up like that very slim outside possibility of what if they consider uniting the belts as part of that process, which I don't foresee happening. But it can help give the match an even bigger, a big fight feel to it, the way that WWE constructs promotional videos, the way that they can frame them as both champions, I think would go a pretty good distance at making it seem like an even bigger deal. I don't think it's necessary, but I just think it would be unique and cool, and they'd have to maybe work overtime elsewhere on a two-night card, though, to create matches of intrigue with, you know, one less title being defended. And there's only, you know, like three titles that matter in the company. So that's kind of slim pickings when the U.S. title and IC title and the tag titles aren't deemed very important. So that's another thing to keep in mind with a two-night WrestleMania.
We got some lip service to the IC title being important tonight, at least, with Sammy finally getting his title shot again. But no, you are correct. William, back to you. I don't know if you want to follow up on that. I mean, I when you say people aren't giving enough credence to it, I just think at first it felt like a red herring or a B plan, and it felt like things were going a different direction. But it's logical to talk about. It's logical for Lesnar to go, I'm going to win the next match I'm in, and if I win that next match, it means it's going to be title versus title. Like, that's what he would say if it were real. It also could be a ploy to get people to buy tickets if they think that's the big, you know, that's the big match. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, William, back to you for any thoughts on any of that.
Yeah, I was just kind of wondering more about, like, the reaction in general. Like, maybe I'm projecting a little bit, but I personally wouldn't want to see that because, I don't know, it would be kind of like when they kind of did the same thing for Becky, Ronda, and Charlotte where they took the title from Asuka, and there was, like, a little bit of resentment that you know, we're not going to have Asuka defend the title, and, you know, you guys did her dirty. So I feel like with all the talent that's at the Elimination Chamber, Riddle, Rollins, Lashley, to name a few, I feel like potentially there could be a little bit of backlash, like people say, we could have, like, Lesnar Reigns doesn't need title versus title. You could have that one match on its own, and, you know, maybe the other night, the first night, you could have a Rollins title defense or a Lashley title defense, what have you.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to have a title versus title match, then that means they either going to merge the title or have a screw job or have the titles merged and then create another world title afterwards because Eric Bischoff gives it to Triple H or something. Mike, it sounds like a big deal, but then it weakens one of the other nights by not, you know, if Roman's on one night, and Lesnar's on the other. Or, I'm sorry, if Reigns and Lesnar's on one night, but you have the Raw title defended by Lashley or whomever at that point is champion, because Elimination Chamber can change all that, it just feels like WrestleMania being two nights, it's bigger. If WrestleMania is one night, I see it more being a better option or it's a good option, but with less negatives. And by having a two-night WrestleMania, I just think you have two world title belts, you have two TV shows, you don't want a world champion not to be on. You don't want each show to not have their own top champion, saying, well, there's going to be one floating champion like the women's tag belts, but then we're the secondary titles, IC and US, are going to mean more. That just hasn't been something Vince McMahon has committed to for any stretch of time for decades, so I don't have hope for that. So I just see more negatives to it, and I, that's why I don't think they're going to do it, William. I mean, I think in the end, you know, we'll get Lesnar Reigns, but it won't be title versus title, which is fine.
And they'd
go ahead, Mike, and then go to him. Yeah,
they'd have to go really far out of their way to make a different match have as much intrigue with no titles on the line whatsoever. And
yeah,
they
exactly.
They can't even do that with the Intercontinental title. So
no way.
Unless they pull in some, you know, do an attraction match and the
what's
attraction.
Left?
Yes, I don't know. Maybe bring Kane up again. Who knows?
Edge against Kane.
There we go.
But that's not enough. You know, I mean, like, they don't have a lot of cards left to play. I mean, I'm not enthused about Ronda Rousey. You know, I mean, she's been good in the ring, but I just, her personality is such a turnoff that I'm not entertained. Like, it's sort of, you know, car crash intriguing. But I think the novelty of this MMA phenom who then lost and was the sorest loser in the history of sports, and now she just can't wait to rub in everyone's face how wonderful motherhood is and how that's her whole priority. And you want us to invest in your quest to become a champion because of a couple clever lines you're given that you managed to remember and spit out. I don't know. I'm not excited about that. I don't know that, honestly, viewers are. She got a chant, I assume, tonight. I assume that wasn't piped in. But it's not like she's getting these great reactions. Go watch. There's great reactions. Go watch the Rock and Roll Express in the 80s coming out on NWA TV, Jim Crockett Promotions. Watch the Von Erichs in Dallas. Watch Stone Cold Steve Austin during his peak. I mean, Hulk Hogan in the AWA before Vince McMahon, you know, hired him away from the AWA when Hulkamania was born. Like, whatever. There's big responses for wrestlers. CM Punk in Chicago. This isn't one of them. Like, this is it. Goldberg and Ronda tonight were not, whoa, this is a hot product. This is big star Band-Aids trying to prop up a weak set of alternate matches that, as Mike, you and I are talking about, there's not another one out there that jumps out anymore. Everybody's aged out or has been burned out and overexposed.
And they make a big deal about Ronda, her first appearance on SmackDown ever. Like, that's a really big whoop. And then she comes out, and is it the reaction they want?
No.
I don't know.
And savvy fans are watching her shake hands and smile going, you know, calling bullshit on it. And it's like, we know you don't mean this. That ship has sailed.
Yep. So. And with Goldberg, they didn't announce it, so that was meant to be a surprise. So you might argue that they would have expected that to have the biggest pop of the night because it was a surprise factor. And I don't know if it's that either. And like I mentioned earlier, it wouldn't be for me. I might be surprised it to the extent that I go, huh, and, you know, that's it.
I'd rather have Big E and Drew and even Edge in the positions and Bianca Belair and, you know, I don't know, Raquel Gonzalez called it from NXT. Like, I just give me wrestlers who actually have passion and can still go and you want to watch their segments. And it's not, you know, a car crash or a curiosity, but it's just somebody who knows how to just play into the storyline and do so effectively, you know, play within the walls of the universe and with, you know, coveting the things that everybody else is coveting. I mean, Drew McIntyre having a Moss match and then a Corbin match at WrestleMania a year after, you know, I don't know. It's just, Drew doesn't have to be this derailed. Big E didn't have to be that derailed. You know, Seth and Kevin Owens and Bobby Lashley, there's like enough names who are there every week. But, you know, WrestleMania is all, you know, for so long has been about matches you're not going to see elsewhere, attractions you're not going to see elsewhere. But Saudi Arabia has watered that down. You know, I mean, Saudi Arabia has made WrestleMania seem so much less special because there's so often, you know, quote, special attraction matches in Saudi Arabia that either have stolen it for WrestleMania or watered down the concept.
And
I'm sorry if anyone watched SmackDown and was really excited about Elimination Chamber and Ronda and Goldberg and WrestleMania with our tone. But I mean, you know, I'm just speaking my mind and my perspective on this.
Yeah, let me run something past you regarding Big E, because he's going to come up in any conversation like this when they brought in Rousey or, well, now that Big E's, not that she's intruding on his space, really, but like Goldberg, for instance, and how Drew is with Madcap Moss and or Corbin. And you, like, what about Big E? Like, that would be awesome. Does a company feel like, well, we need to have the New Day machine running at all times? And if that means Kofi and Woods right now, and Woods goes down injured, well, bring in Big E, because we need to keep the New Day machine going, because that's just a fun thing, and we can't stop that. Is that any part of what is happening to Big E right now, or does that crossover not make sense?
Well, no, I mean, I think that is precisely it. But Big E as a world champion is more important than anything WWE will ever do in the tag team division. You know, like the way Vince McMahon promotes tag teams. So, yes, I can see them go, oh, we need Big E in that happy, smiling, you know, zany act. You know, we lost King Xavier, so let's just have Big E go back to doing his thing. I mean, yes, but I think that's why, but my argument is no, you know, the tag division is not a priority for Vince McMahon on a high level, and Big E did well enough and had some things working against him with just the schedule and the opponents and the booking. He did good enough work in the ring and on the mic that he deserved to have a sustained top tier singles push. And they teased people with the idea that he would be a substantial ongoing single star that would break away from New Day. And even if they try to go back to that now, it's sort of like when Seth, you know, almost 6 years ago now had the big, you know, comeback from his injury and he came out at Extreme Rules and the crowd was like, yes. And then he turned and then it was a heel and they're like, oh, that was the moment. And, you know, you can't turn him babyface and have that same moment later. And with Big E, I think this is fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I think fans are not going to be willing to invest themselves in a Big E push because they will feel they're just going to have the rug pulled out from him and them again. So, yes, I think you're right, but I don't think it justifies it.
Yeah, and I did not mean to suggest that I'm a proponent.
Right. Oh, no, I know that.
Of diverting Big E away from what he had going for the sake of maintaining New Day. But I'm just thinking from the company's perspective, maybe as misguided as it may be in terms of booking an interesting show or card, maybe it was just as innocent as that, as, well, we want to keep New Day going because Big E's this positive thing that kids love.
And I think that's good news if you're pro, if you want Big E to not feel like management rejected him, but rather, I mean, it's still like you could still just go, but yes, they didn't. It wasn't a vote of no confidence in Big E, but it still was not appreciating what they had and the damage they're doing by not seeing it through. So it is a consolation perspective, but it doesn't undo. It's better that it wasn't a vote of no confidence in Big E. And I know that's the spirit of what you're saying. I don't know how happy that's going to make people. I don't know if that's going to satisfy people who see this as a disrespect to Big E, even if the motivation wasn't a vote of no confidence in him, but more we need you over here instead.
Totally. And there's a huge gulf of a difference between how he was portrayed as champion to tonight. It's just, he's back on the ring apron waiting to tag in.
And goofing and being a goof behind, on a Valentine's photo shoot skit with Umberto and Garza. Okay. William, back to you for some final words before I get to Sean.
Yes. I think one of the Royal Rumble match on both sides, the men and the women's, exposed that clearly, I mean, what we already knew, that clearly they've been having some trouble building some new stars to replace, like, the, I don't know, 600 people they fired over the last couple of years. I looked at that Riddick, not Riddick Moss. I'm trying to think. Sheamus's friend.
Ridge
and,
Holland.
Yes, thank you. Him and Sheamus and the back and forth between them and Ricochet and Cesaro. And we've just been seeing these four people like go back and forth for like a couple months, and this tonight, like, it was like the perfect example of just 50-50 booking. And I mean, you saw it at the Rumble that you desperately need to build some new stars, and we're heading into WrestleMania, and I just don't see how this does anything for anybody. It makes them all seem like time fillers, if anything.
Yes, that's what they are. And it comes through. You are seeing the reality, of what the mid-card is. And I mean, I refer to it all the time. When I interviewed Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara out in LA for the Ultimate Insiders DVD series, when that was like their first interview together since they wrote TV together and then kind of had a personal falling out. And they talked about, we sit down with Vince and go, what do you got for Steve Austin? What do you got for Stone Cold? Okay. What do you got for Rock? Okay. And like, the last 3% of their meeting would be about everything else because it was just filling time. It wasn't his priority. And, WWF was a Bruno Sammartino business for a very long time with, some special attractions. And then there was, Superstar Graham and Bob Backlund and Andre the Giant and Pedro Morales. But Vince McMahon knew there were stars that drew the money and sold the tickets. And then there was a whole bunch of people who were interchangeable, not that they weren't valuable, but that losing one or two or three of them, they were replaceable, even if it would be a little drop off. And that's a lot of wrestling territories ran that way. That's what Vince knew. That's the world he entered when he started being part of that company before, he took it over. So it's how he books, there was a Hogan era and he tried with Lex Luger and he, did it a bit ensemble with Bret and Shawn and, Diesel and Sid and Yokozuna and that kind of era before the Attitude era. And then it was the Stone Cold Rock and to a lesser degree, Triple H show. And I mean, and then John Cena and now Roman Reigns, it's what he does. And you are reading, you are seeing the truth be revealed. And the repeating, you know, the rinse and repeat, rearrange a little bit stuff that just goes on, it really is there to pad out the shows. And I think they think, hey, we've hired the people, we ran the vignettes, we introduced who they are, and now just they're going to go out there and fill the middle of the show. I think they think we've made good hires for interchangeable mid-card people, and now they're just there to fill the, you know, fill 35 minutes here and 40 minutes there in between the anchor segments. Mike, anything you want to add to that?
When William mentioned that match in particular with Ricochet and Holland and Sheamus and Cesaro, I was preparing to, in the pointlessness of it, I was preparing to tell him, yeah, it's time filler, but he came to that conclusion on his own because
right.
William knows what's up.
Yeah.
He saw it, and I would never have remembered if not for doing the post show tonight, because I made note of it, that it started as a singles match with Ricochet
yep.
with Cesaro versus Holland with Sheamus.
They haven't done that in a while, but they
and
do a lot.
Yeah. Ricochet wins, and then for whatever reason, Sheamus is angry and, as the commentators told us, demanded a tag match. And now it's a tag match after the break. And so now they get two segments out of it. And who cares? It's the one bit of something they have to go on, which was Ricochet smashing Holland's face and breaking his nose.
Yep.
They touch on it, but we're lucky they even do that. It's like for them, it's a bonus. Like, aren't we lucky Ricochet smashed his face? So this actually makes some sense that they're still fighting. But that's just like luck that happened. So yeah, that's I double down on that match or those two matches actually, and how, yeah, it's just padding out tonight's card.
Yep. William, thanks. Good topic.
Yeah, thank you guys for taking my call. Have a good one.
Of course, yeah, as always. All right, we'll go to Sean, and then it's going to be Javier Machado time. Sean in Tennessee, Murphy, welcome.
Wade, I love your rant, man. I love when you go off on stuff. I absolutely love it. Man, good to talk to you.
Oh,
Mike,
good.
Always good to talk to you, man. How are you, sir?
Hey, Sean.
Javier. You're coming, man, but I got to get this is going to be fun. Okay, so the show, the first two segments, or the last and first, were both very good. The Roman stuff was great until the Goldberg music started, and I was like, oh, man, here we go. And so I will say, going back to Goldberg, I'm with you guys. I'm worn out on Goldberg, but came back, you know, 5 years ago. The promo was great. It really was. It was genuine, and the stuff with Lesnar was good. And then after that, it's like, just go away. Just, we don't need you anymore. Like, stop coming back just for the, like you said, the money grab. It was fine while it lasted, and they just run it into the ground, and it's just not fun anymore. But I wanted to go back to the Ronda stuff a little bit, just to go back to some of the stuff in the segment as far as, I love Charlotte's line, "My baby, I have my baby, and it's prettier than yours." That was a great line. I cracked up on that. That was fantastic. But going back to what you said about Ronda, I don't mind seeing Ronda back because she did work her butt off when she was in WWE and worked hard at her craft and all that kind of stuff, which was good. I mean, I liked that she was into what she was doing, but she's not. She needs to be a heel. I mean, period, end of story. Like, she cannot be a babyface. She's a horrible good guy. And so, mm-hmm. you know, this feud against Charlotte, yeah, they're in the right place, quote unquote, because Charlotte will get the best out of whatever they're going to do with her heel act, but Ronda's just not likable, and it's just not good. But going back to Sonya, yeah, I didn't understand why she was in that stuff talking about Becky and why she's flip-flopping this in the ring with Naomi, this whole crap with Naomi, and then why does Adam never call her out on any of this stuff going on? Like, she's just backstage with Adam. Yeah. They're going to have meetings, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, but Naomi, you know, tell me what you guys think about all that, because I think it's stupid, and Adam should call her out on it, and they just never have any story about it.
Yeah, Mike, what's your assessment of the journey the big journey with Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville? It seems like they've had ideas that they've kind of stopped midstream. And then we've had this long ongoing thing with Naomi. I thought this was, I don't know, I was going to say one of the better weeks, but, you know, for the gamesmanship going on with all of them and Pierce just, you know, ultimately agreeing with what Naomi and Sonya kind of worked out. I don't know. I mean, this felt like it was a better version and a more focused version of what they sometimes do that just feels like filler or we need to get them on TV doing something. But how do you feel about the storyline and where it is now?
Yeah, Sean's referencing a segment I actually enjoyed from tonight. I mentioned it earlier.
Yeah.
And I like the performances of all three, Naomi, Pierce, and Deville. I think that's what we should see more of when Deville is being particularly unfair to somebody, which has been Naomi. But he looks kind of incredulous at her, like because Deville sort of sidestepped Naomi at first and then really quickly said, oh, you'll get a championship next week against Charlotte, right? And his body language, Pierce's, was that of, what are you doing and what are you talking about? And Naomi appropriately didn't buy into it. That would be bad because mm-hmm. then she'd be a stupid baby.
Well, yeah.
It's like the stupid good guy. And Pierce stepped in being more credible, saying, well, you might not take her word for it, but you can take mine. And that's comforting, you know, to me and to Naomi. There should be more of that. And the only excuse I can come up with, and I'm playing devil's advocate, is that two people in charge shouldn't bicker in front of their subordinates.
Right.
But with that said, it's not uncommon to see at least a few seconds of them, just the two of them, backstage together. That happens, but we don't see Pierce, like, having taken her aside and setting her straight or asking for an explanation. So they haven't
right.
covered all the bases as far as that goes. And,
yeah.
It would be more interesting if they did, I think. Like, not bickering leaders, but one who's a little off the rails and one who's trying to control the show. Like we always, like going back quite a ways now, that's what we always liked about Pierce is how
yes.
he's not the guy who comes out and shows up the talent. Like if Stephanie McMahon were in charge, he's the leader who's white knuckle holding on, trying to keep control as best he can.
He's an earnest middle management. He's a middle manager with earnest good intentions who doesn't have as much leverage as he needs to do the good that he wants to do.
Yep.
Yep. And Sonya is not, you know, she's
exactly.
Yeah. She's yeah. So he's trying to manage the situation, which never really had a full explanation. You know, WWE doesn't like to really get quote bogged down in the details that every other form of entertainment provides their audience about, you know, who gave them the power and how is it structured and who, you know, why doesn't Pierce stand up to her more? They just don't supply you with that because they just want to get through this week and they do whatever's convenient for this week, regardless of what they did oftentimes last week and certainly months ago. So yeah, anyway, go ahead, Sean. I hear you jumping in.
Oh no, I was just saying, like, Mike, I agree with you. Naomi was good in the segment. I'm not disputing that at all. It's what you said with the backstory of just like Adam knows this has been going on for a long time. It's not like this is new. I mean, this has been going on for weeks and weeks and weeks. They just had a match together like last week or 2 weeks ago. Like, get to the bottom of why this is happening just in a quick, you know, little thing. They could have a segment about it real quick or something. Just, like, give me something. Don't have Adam just act like it's not a big deal or, you know, just he kind of just seemed nonchalant about it other than looking back and just kind of acting weird about it. But I'm glad he said, and I'm not excited about Naomi and Charlotte again next week. I'm just not excited about it. Naomi, you know,
yeah.
I like her. She's just not good in the ring. And so I'm not looking forward to the match. But going back to, I wanted to bring up one thing, because I was thinking about when Sasha got eliminated, like you guys have talked about, as early as she did, and there wasn't a lot of fanfare behind it. Do you think that this is where, even though it wouldn't be as high on the card because of the other women's matches that will be on WrestleMania and kind of where they're going, do you think it's still possible they could do have Bayley come back and finally have the Sasha Bayley feud we've been kind of wanting or thinking about for a long time? Because I would like it. I just wish it would be higher on the card, more thought about, a bigger deal. But what do you guys think? Is that a possibility?
What do you think, Mike?
Admittedly, I don't know anything about Bayley's status in terms of a return. If she's good to go, like in the next 2 or 3 weeks, then absolutely go for it. I think that would be great. Not the first time for it, but they can do it and they can build. That's what I'm talking about. It's a time frame to build it toward WrestleMania, and that would be fine. I think Bayley's return would be a big deal. Asuka's return would be a big deal as well, if that's a thing. I don't know what her status is. But I think Bayley, either of those returning would add some like significant star power to offset Sasha in a good way.
Sean, anything else?
Yeah, and I just wanted to go back to what you guys were talking about as far as the middle of the card. Wade, just kind of being funny, but I think you give them too much credit. Like, you know, they brought up the IC title, but they haven't in like 3 months. Like, I mean, I know they are now, It's been 3 months. Like, you should talk about it more than 3 months or more than once in 3 months. And that's what I'm getting frustrated about with WWE is they just, you know, the filler we talk about week on week. And even with Rich Holland, going back to what you guys, you know, William just brought it up as far as Ridge is going to keep on losing, so when he turns on Sheamus, what good is it? How over is he when he turns on Sheamus? Like, if he's going to lose like 8 times before that, how are we going to get invested in it? And Sheamus is ultimately probably going to win anyway. So how did that, you know, Ridge Holland, he comes in, and it's just he's just kind of this big guy that, you know, is plotting. He's getting better in the ring over time, but I don't know. And like, you know, having Eric just lose in 2 minutes, like. I mean, obviously, we don't care about the tag teams, but you're going to have Jimmy beat Eric in 2 minutes. It's just like, where are we going? And I wanted to hear your thought on kind of the Natalya, Aaliyah, where they're – I mean, I guess it's okay where they're going. I mean, it's a decent little storyline. I want them to get something deeper than the Guinness Book of World Records stuff. And Natalya is a heel. I know it's annoying. I get it. But I just want them to do more with these middle storylines. And I wanted to hear what you guys thought about that real quick. Javier, take it home, my friend. Wade, you're the best. Mike, appreciate you guys taking my call as always.
Thanks, Sean, so much. I have low expectations and a low bar for mid-card, you know, lower-card content on WWE TV shows. I mean, I know what it is, and the formula is not a sports environment that's building up, you know, wrestlers who are working their way up the ranks. Like, that's not what WWE does. So Aaliyah is getting one up on Natalya with technicality wins and driving Natalya nuts after Natalya bragged about, you know, and bragged about the, you know, record setting stats. So I'm fine with it. It's something. I think Natalya's done better work in this storyline than other stuff she's done. I believe that her character really is sleeping with the Guinness Book of World Records. She has so much pride in it. She just carries it around. You know, it's like separating her from that is like separating Dana Brooke from the 24/7 belt. It's not going to happen. And Aaliyah's, you know, she's underestimating Aaliyah, and Aaliyah's finding different ways to win, and it's driving the veteran Natalya nuts. I'm fine with it. It's, you know, would it be great if WWE just overhauled everything and you know, had enough of a structure built in fundamentally to what they do as a company that you wouldn't need a Guinness Book of World Record silly storyline for people to care about Natalya fighting Aaliyah? Yes, but that's not what they do. And so for what this is in the category of things that they do, I think it's been fine. I think Aaliyah and Natalya have been solid in this. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I'm with Sean in that I wish the mid-card was more interesting, and I would have said what you said, Wade, is that you're not going to get that here, that they just don't put that sort of investment in it. So I don't know. I don't really care about the Natalya Aaliyah thing. Aaliyah kind of annoyed me tonight because of how pleased with herself she was in the ring during the match. Like, she kind of behaved like a little kid who was just given the present she was hoping for. Like, oh my gosh, like, I almost rolled you up. And she pointed at the Aaliyah 317 gimmick on her shirt. And just, she seems really naive, and maybe I think that's what they're going for, but I don't find that very becoming of a prize fighter, you know?
Yeah. No, there's that.
And so my biggest takeaway from, if we're talking about those two, is that a few weeks ago, last time I was on, Wade and I learned after the fact on Twitter that Guinness Book of World Records not only is still a thing, but kind of a big deal in some circles. I read the books when I was a kid and really got a kick out of it. And now there's people who have YouTube channels whose purpose is breaking Guinness World Records. And yes. I'm just happy that that tradition is living on in some, the new technological format. That's my takeaway from this feud.
All right. We will bring Javier Machado, PW Torch contributor, into the program. Let's see. Wade Keller, pro wrestling. There we go. There it is. Javier, there's your clip. Although my name was on it. Maybe that, I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
Is there a better one here? Let's see if this works. There.
There we go.
Three notes. Yeah, that's better. Hey, Javier, what's up?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Mike. How's it going?
One day I'm going to update the switchboard and there's going to be a whole jingle for you and you're just going to be like, wow.
You know, I have actually been brainstorming stuff, but we'll talk about that off air.
Okay, good. Since that may derail my idea, I want to get this out first. If any listeners want to contribute a Javier jingle, we can have a contest. Or maybe only one person will do it. Maybe no one will do it. But if someone wants to submit homemade music with a little Javier jingle, perhaps with some lyrics, I think that could be fun. Now, Javier, you can pitch your idea later. That might override that. But at least I got that out there. Go ahead.
I'm actually turning red with embarrassment right now.
Good.
And I'll probably just embarrass myself a little bit now. I might as well get that over with. I found that ending rather weird, particularly the verbiage that they used, because talking about Becky Lynch told her that Deville that that Rousey had chosen her, but then what Ronda Rousey said, that she said, you're not special, you're just first. I thought that might be hinting that it's going to be, she's going to take out Charlotte on day one and then Becky on day two.
Wait, we're going back to January 1st for day one?
No, WrestleMania day one.
Did I miss a headline that there's now a day two pay-per-view coming up on March 2nd? I see what you're saying.
Oh, God.
Okay.
No.
Can you imagine, if we get Lesnar Reigns title unification on night one, and then, the winner defends against, Lashley or something on night two, everything, and then Ronda wrestles two nights. WrestleMania, you don't buy tickets to two nights to see roster full of stars that one night couldn't contain, but instead you just get to see version A and version B of top stars wrestling both nights because they don't have enough to sell out or sustain interest. I mean, maybe I'm not willing to read into it. I shouldn't say I'm not willing. I'm not willing to commit to that being what's happening here, but I think it's interesting conjecture. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I think they should have, first of all the tag teams do singles matches against each other on night one, and then do proper tag matches on night two. I mean, and then we can get these shows out to 8 or 9 hours long each, which is what I've wanted them to be for a long time. As for the first comment, I did not think of that in terms of meaning first night, and then I'm going to get Becky on the second night. That would be something.
It would explain the red herring, which is Becky said, you chose me, but then she chooses Charlotte, and then she goes, you're not excluded, you're just first, or, you know, whatever the line was. I mean, I guess it makes the weird red herring of Becky saying Rhonda said she chose her.
Mm-hmm.
That does make more sense. So Rhonda, what wins both? They're going to unify both men, the men's and the women's world titles and on WrestleMania weekend and go back to one title.
Yeah, the pieces fit together.
Yeah.
So, yeah, keep an eye on that.
Javier is already bringing it.
Yeah,
he's shaking up the foundation of our thoughts on that closing segment.
Because, I mean, with the – I mean, I would say I'm like 50% on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
The one I'm much higher on that I'm sure is going to be – I'm pretty sure that Lesnar and Reigns are going to be title versus title. Because they've already teased it once, and Heyman was gloating to the fact that he cost Lesnar the title, and I don't think they would be hitting that so hard. Is that, you know, because now if you have Lesnar without the title versus Reigns, it's not going to feel as special as if he had it. And so just them hitting that point over and over again really makes me think that that's going to be that Lesnar's going to come out as champion from Elimination Chamber, and going to be a champion versus champion.
Do you like that idea, by the way?
I mean, if the thing is that, I mean, only if they're planning on getting rid of the brand split at the end, because I don't think having a floating champion is going to work the way that they do stuff. And, you know, so I don't like that idea. And, or, you know, like you said, you know, Bischoff creates a new title and gives it to Triple H, you know, that's that story. You know, I don't like that idea either. But, you know, so, I mean, it could, I don't know. I mean, do you think that they might actually be thinking about getting rid of the brand split? Because, I mean, they don't have, SmackDown's been a chore to watch with, you know, lack of talent they got on there.
I don't think so. No. I don't think Fox and USA want the same, you know, the same talent on their show that's on the other one. But I mean, I can't rule it out. I genuinely can't rule it out. Maybe that's the only way WWE keeps everybody happy is having, you know, Ronda and Lesnar and Lashley and Reigns and Heyman and Charlotte and Becky all on every, they just burn out all their top talent twice a week, to make both shows superstar studded. But I mean, I think Vince McMahon believes in the concept of the brand split and isn't going to abandon it. And I think having SmackDown on Fox and Raw on USA on both live bookending the week, it's as even as the brand split has ever been. You know, there isn't really a B show. There's times where it seems like Raw has been, but not by much. It just more had to do with, you know, oh, the Roman program's hot. I don't think it's a good move, and I don't think Vince will think it's a good move, but who am I to get in Vince's head as far as that goes, especially if he has other people pushing him at the networks.
Yeah, I thought the first thing I thought of was the networks, and I don't know enough about that relationship that each network has with a company and what say they might have in having sort of an exclusive show, because it's not a true split ever, really, because they kind of do what they want when they think that they need to, like with Big E is now on SmackDown, just and here he is. Wade talked earlier on this show about how you don't want your wrestling company to be taking much advice or criticism from a network that's paying them to make the wrestling show. So what if WWE said to both networks, trust us, getting rid of the brand split is going to be best. I don't know what sort of pushback they would have against that, but I do feel confident that the sameness that we feel to week watching just Raw or week to week watching just SmackDown, you would get twice a week, because they wouldn't do what AEW, one thing they do pretty well of is mixing up their talent from week to week. And shows feel different from week to week. I don't think you'd get that in WWE from Monday to Friday within 1 week, because they would, I would think they would just succumb to, yeah, like Wade said, you get the top guys and girls on Monday and Friday. Give them more of that. So I think the sameness would be there twice a week. That's what I think.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
sure the sameness will still be on there because they're not going to know how to really handle it, and they're just going to basically, you know, make things worse, but I could see them think that it might be a way to make things better, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I agree.
I mean,
that's why I can't.
I'm saying that's a possible idea. I don't think it's a good one, but I'm saying it's possible.
Exactly.
And you brought up AEW. Was it me or did it seem like McAfee took a shot at AEW maybe? During the Natalya match?
Oh, I didn't catch that. What did he say?
I'm going to paraphrase because I didn't write down the words word for word, but he basically starts talking about how, like, on any given day, the WWE is, you know, the wrestlers in the WWE are so good. He's actually he's defending 50-50 booking, and he's saying that, you know, on any given day, any wrestler can beat another wrestler on any given Monday, and then he goes through the days of the week. And then it goes, unlike other shows or other guys, I think is the word that he said, unlike other guys, you know, because anybody can beat anybody. And I'm like, I'm not 100% sure it was a shot at them, but it was kind of like weird.
That is weird because it's not really even true. Like, I mean, AEW doesn't do 50-50 booking because they don't book rematches very often. You know, we have Cody and Sammy in a rematch, but it's there's not even Steven 50-50 booking in AEW because they generally do one or two matches and move on. They don't do, you know, they don't have a bunch of people on the mid card just exchanging, you know, having 4-4 records over the course of 10 weeks. Mike, did you pick up on that or anything else on it?
I didn't notice it, but maybe he's trying to brag about it, the outcomes just being unpredictable. Yeah. It, much like the flip of a 50-50 coin, you know, is unpredictable.
Yeah.
But
if you sit around on a rainy day and flip a coin, Mike, that's not entertaining.
No.
Sure enough. But there's no consequences. Like, whoa, it's heads. Like, well, right, but it might have been tails, and it doesn't matter what it is. Like, that's the problem with 50-50 booking is it has all the consequence of – flipping a coin for no reason in your house alone on a rainy day. It's like, well, if it has no ramifications and it ultimately means nothing because the next time it might be the other, and even then it won't matter. That's not unpredictability. Well, it's unpredictability, but it's unpredictability that doesn't matter. It doesn't come with equity or value.
It's like too much parity, like a sports league that tries to fight for parity, but to the point that it may as well be, it's perfectly random down the middle. I don't know. If AEW isn't doing a bunch of rematches, maybe he's claiming that their match outcomes are more predictable than WWE, and that's less entertaining because it's predictable. But I understand the argument to that.
Yeah. All right. I'm here.
And maybe he's a football guy, so maybe he was talking about any given Sunday, because that was what he was saying, any given Monday, any given, you know, maybe that's what it was, maybe I miss, you know, but yeah, I just found it kind of weird when he said the other guys. Man, I did not expect to see Natalya in three different segments today.
Yeah, I was surprised when she got the third segment, for sure.
You know, I mean,
and it was all just weird. For the it's the stupid Xia Li thing where she's going to go in and talk to Aaliyah, and then Xia Li leaves the locker room, and Natalya's scared, and so she runs away. Well, she's not in the locker room anymore. She just left. So you can go talk to Aaliyah and be fine. Like, the scary danger has left the room, therefore I'm definitely not going in the room. Like, it didn't even make sense.
I can try to make it make sense if you want.
Okay. Yes, Mike, do. I want.
Don't invest in this, but for the sake of it. They did point out how Xia Li, whenever she returned, which feels like it's the last month or two, is the protector now.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably Natalya's goal was to go into the locker room and bully Aaliyah, but then she saw the protector come out and then thought better of bullying somebody because that would get back to the protector. And in that, she's kind of putting over Xia Li as somebody to fear, even if you're a veteran.
Oh, yeah, I think so. But how does that solve itself if he bullies her next week? She says, well, I'm going to wait till next week. I guess because the match is next week.
Well, you that's your problem. You're thinking of next week.
Right.
What's going to happen? They showed us this thing tonight, and that's it.
Yeah. All right. Anything else out here?
That was a better explanation than what I had, Mike. My explanation was that maybe Natalya was afraid that she left the lightning in the locker room. And was afraid to walk in.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So
that is dangerous.
Yeah.
And I guess, I mean, honestly, if Natalya, in real life, if somebody was protecting someone and they left the room and then a threat entered the room, the person who's feeling threatened, if we're to believe Aaliyah's helpless, could go, help, help. And then Xia Li would not be far enough away yet where she could run back in. So maybe Natalya, because if we actually apply real world rules to this, Natalya knows she's within earshot of Aaliyah, who will scream for help the second she sees me because she's so intimidated by me.
Aaliyah would say, I require protection, and she'd be saved.
Yes.
And speaking of great lines, my favorite line on that was actually McAfee with the shillelagh saying, you know, I'm holding a shillelagh. I've never felt more like Pat McAfee than right now. I thought it was I liked that line. I think someone already brought this up, but I think it's official. Any hope that we had for Big E being involved in anything important, I think, pretty much done, I would assume.
I know.
Yeah.
And if they try, it won't work as well. If they try again, fans aren't gonna. They're just. I don't think they're gonna buy in. They'll want to, but they're gonna be hesitant. It just won't be the same.
Well, I mean, it's gonna be hard to invest in anybody, you know, that gets a push like Big E did from now on, because it's like, if all of a sudden you put like a Damian Priest in that position, then, you know, what hope do you have that he's actually going to, you know, that they're going to stick with him? I think he ended up losing the title because of the situation that happened on day one, but I think they were just looking for an out anyway. Once they were, you know, given that, given the off ramp, they decided to take it. And I mean, I feel bad for him, because it's like, you know, I don't know if you could get back on that horse. Is he involved in the Elimination Chamber match?
I don't think so.
It's Lashley, Lesnar, Rollins, Theory, Riddle, and Styles.
Yep.
Oof. Yeah, so, but yeah. Well, I mean, it is in Saudi, so I don't know if is he one of the people that goes to Saudi or not? Do you know?
No, I don't think. I don't think they. I mean, maybe they add it, but not yet.
No. I'm saying, is he one of the ones that is the conscientious objector? Like, because I mean, when they had the match with Kevin Owens.
Oh, I misunderstood
Theory,
you.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Because you know, when it was Kevin Owens and Theories, I'm like, you know, Theory's going to win because Kevin Owens is not going. So.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so is Big E. Yeah, because if he were for that reason, I could see then that might be why they that you know he's not in the match. But other than that, it's you know kind of odd.
They're saving his big push for the summer and they don't want to derail it and have him try and fail in the meantime.
I mean, the only problem is that now that he's on SmackDown, I would think that McIntyre would probably be the SummerSlam push would be my guess. Why they have them dealing with the whole Corbin thing. And Mike, I 100% agree with you with everything you said about that sword. I hate it. I hate it so much. It's just, and what was the percentage you gave? Like 20% makes them 20% less cool?
20 to 30% better segments without the sword.
Yeah. I mean, it's brutal.
You know, they named it. You know, it's named Angela, right?
Yeah, Angela. And you're right, because it's like they're more
Angela's ashes.
Yeah. They're more excited over Angela than they are over McIntyre in the match that you're watching. So it's like supremely annoying. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was a rough episode. I mean, I didn't even talk about Lesnar and the Heyman thing. Well, you guys finally made me go back and watch the Crown Jewel because I never got around to watch it. So I finally, while I was on hold, I actually went, fired it up and saw the end of that. And yeah, I mean, it was just stupid because it seemed like they were just the way that Heyman threw the belt in the middle and said, just do it. It was obviously done to just throw off the audience so that you didn't know who he was siding with. So while I don't, it was just stupid. And I think it created more of a question mark and more of an issue and more of a headache than it was really worth for, to keep the audience strung along. But, I think that's about it. I mean, other than the opening segment being good, that was pretty much it. So.
Yeah. I mean, are you, I asked Mike this early in the show, Javier, are you satisfied with Heyman? Like, was this a magnificent work of art by Heyman in this promo, kind of tying everything together and addressing, questions that needed to be answered?
The content was really good in terms of, explaining everything and tying up, what was going on, that this was a spur of the moment decision. I think it's important that he, he still had loyalty to Lesnar, that in his mind, Lesnar would be ruling Raw and Reigns SmackDown. And, so I think he still had loyalty to both of them at that point. And then, I think that's kind of what he was really, underlying there. And then he made a decision that, he should have really, because he was unfaithful and he still had, he was still kind of pining for his old love. And,
right.
he deserved what he got from Reigns, which is kind of, a messed up, abusive, tactic, but hey, that's the story that they're telling. I was glad with that. I just thought that it was a lot of exposition to open the show.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
I'm wondering how much sound sweetening there was because I could, I could imagine some of the crowd just being, man, this is going on for too long. I was fine with it story-wise, but like, I would say that it went on for long enough where I was finding myself a little bit, bored because it was just like, are we going to wrap it up anytime soon? I think I would have rather seen like a sit down interview with him, situation instead of just him cutting the promo in the middle of the ring.
Or a video package that was curated and Heyman walks through the timeline in his mindset. I mean, I'm not saying that would have been better because having Reigns react live on the spot, having the crowd there, that had some benefits for sure, but there would be some benefits to going, all right, let's put this together with music and clips breaking here and there and narration and visual aids to, and even dates to explain here's where I was here. Here's what happened here. The problem is this wasn't a master plan storyline. It was a detour, due to COVID. Although I did, I thought I'm happy because I like logic and this felt at first watch, logical and sufficiently answering the questions that I had, including, are they going to claim the Superman punch was real and it wasn't a ploy or it wasn't, Heyman took one for the team for the deception. Like he's saying everything was sincere. The thing they just haven't done is, but I think it's just, assumed that Lesnar was just messing around and that Heyman wasn't pulling strings from behind the scenes, but maybe it'll come out he was. And that will be addressed, or maybe they'll just decide not to talk about it because it doesn't fit in with where they want to go from here. That's the only thing that hasn't been at least clarified by somebody in the know.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I don't think because there was some talk about that what does Reigns gain from Paul Heyman turning on Lesnar? I don't think it's a question that Reigns put Heyman up to it, that this was a decision Heyman did himself to get into the good graces. Because, I've heard some people mention that. I'm like, it's not what Reigns gains. It's it's what Heyman had to do to, you know, to prove to Reigns that, you know, he's worth a second, you know, a second shot.
Yeah.
So, you know, and plus, if you think about it, it also like reinforces with Heyman, you know, that, oh, I better not screw up again because now, you know, my crash pad is no longer there. So if I screw up again, then I'm truly on my own. So I thought that, so that, that also adds a new wrinkle to Heyman's character.
I could imagine somebody watching this and thinking about it and going, shouldn't Reigns have had more agency in it, like all this? And so Javier, with what you just said, should we have heard more from Reigns and how he feels about firing Heyman and explaining? I mean, not that we need more exposition, but maybe we do. Maybe I'm advocating for that. Did Heyman do too much of the talking for somebody who left the bloodline and then got brought back? Would it have been good at this stage to have a little less Heyman and a little bit more Reigns?
It's funny because I've been watching Book of Boba Fett, and my biggest complaint is that Boba Fett talks way too much in the show, you know, and he should just be there as an imposing figure. And I think I think Roman did enough talking with his facial reactions, his body language and stuff like that to really just get, you know, you understand that because of the way that he was reacting, it's almost like he was already manipulating Heyman as a puppet. And like, you know, those were essentially the words that were, you know, he's happy that he's programmed Heyman to the point where he's basically spitting out what Reigns wants to hear. So I think just the way he stood there looking, reacting, I think that's, you know, more than any, you know, actual verbiage he would do. I kind of dug that.
What do you think, Mike?
Yeah. I mentioned earlier how I like it when Reigns is the strong, silent type, and that's kind of what we want. That's kind of what Boba Fett used to be, like in Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
And now I was less intrigued with him when he was doing a lot of talking. I don't want him to never talk. But I enjoyed the segment tonight in his nonverbal responses to Heyman. I would like to see a little bit of something maybe with Reigns talking with the Usos without Heyman there in a private moment in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And that could unfold in an interesting way. And they might be able to get some of that mystique back and that sort of that family mob or mafia feeling back that this started with. They've got the time to do that. But
yeah, I would like that. I like that idea. Yeah. I would. I mean, Jay just showed himself to be such a good performer, and I just feel like he's regressed. Not his own doing, but his character has just been emptied of what gave him dimensions. I mean, the Usos have never had dimensions. They've just, you know, been a catchphrase in a good match. And that's what the tag division looks for, is a catchphrase in a good match. But there was nuance and layers, and it would be nice to have that back on the road to WrestleMania. Javier, do you want to stick around for a couple emails as we wrap up the show? Because one is kind of tied into, I think, what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
You fine with that?
Yeah, sure.
Cool. Okay, so I'll start with Zach in Texas here. I had a sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach going into SmackDown tonight, and now think I need to chug some Pepto-Bismol. Ronda Rousey challenging Charlotte might give that Roman-Brock match from 2018 a run for its money for worst WrestleMania match ever. It's going to get booed out of Jerry World. The entire promo segment was frankly insulting. Teasing the crowd with Becky Ronda, the match everyone wants, and then pulling the rug out. Just ugh. Finding out that she's egotistical that she couldn't just move on from not getting the match with Ronda 3 years ago and actively lobbied for this match, it caused me to lose respect for Charlotte. Sometimes what you want is the best thing for the greater good. Now Bianca Belair is just a consolation match for Becky? How could anyone think this is a good idea? Mike, your thoughts?
I don't know. I mean, we'd assume they'd keep Becky as a heel, right? Even against Charlotte? Against Becky?
Yeah.
So wouldn't... I don't know if that's a ton better. Charlotte's a heel, and that's pretty much all she can do. Becky can be a babyface, but they feel like really entrenched in her current heel persona. So I feel like Ronda would be in this babyface role either way. I don't know that it would be much better against Becky than Charlotte, you know?
Well, I mean, it would be better if Becky was a babyface and Ronda was a heel, and that was the big match at WrestleMania, and boy, that could have worked, but that's not where we are. Javier.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the crowd right now is pro-Rousey, but, I mean, are they still going to be pro-Rousey when she starts doing weird stuff or saying dumb things, counterproductive things, you know, what, 4 months, whatever month WrestleMania is away from now.
Just say each of them and I'll place in the right answer later. Yeah. Okay. Ronda's getting Ronda's getting the default baseline big star presented as a babyface to a WWE audience reaction. Like, she's not – fans are just going to go along with it. Like, there's a certain – you know, people who are attending SmackDown, there's a majority are just like, we're WWE fans. We're supposed to cheer her. It's clear based on how she's being presented, we're supposed to cheer. This isn't like AEW fans who are in this nuanced way rejecting Cody or a non-nuanced way chanting shut the F up at Brandy. The people attending SmackDown are like, hey, WWE says she's a face, let's cheer for her. That's the baseline, and that's what Ronda's getting. She's not getting more than that right now. Becky could be getting more than that if they kept her babyface. That's the argument for people who are against her, you know, Becky being portrayed as a heel. But obviously, if they do Becky Ronda, fans are going to you know, a lot of fans are going to cheer Becky and boo Ronda, which is just going to set off Ronda into just lashing out and pouting and embarrassing everybody because she's weird. She's a weirdo, I should say. Anyway, all right. Joe from New York. With each passing week, it's clear WrestleMania season just doesn't happen anymore. This is the second week in a row where I watch SmackDown looking for a good show, and it's just more of the same crap. This show is bad. All of the WWE shows have the same problem. The shows are boring. The shows are 90% filler. Nothing is important. It's so bad by the time you get to the important stuff, you no longer care. The Rousey Charlotte ending was good, but the first 90 minutes of the show was so lackluster how many people dropped off before they got to the final segment. January to April used to be the best 4 months of the year for wrestling fans, but WWE doesn't even try anymore. And then they bring Goldberg back? Really? This guy? How many times does this guy get to come back and get a title match? He's not even interesting, to be honest. He sucks. His promo stink. His wrestling has always sucked. He's just not interesting. What does this guy bring to the table in 2022? And final point, wrestling fans, you want to send out a real message. Don't sell out WrestleMania. Stay home and watch it for $5 on Peacock. Because $5 is about the amount of effort Vince McMahon and his creative team have put into this. Fans, nothing speaks louder than when you keep your money in your pocket. WrestleMania season, Mike, what do you think so far? And does the Elimination Chamber Saudi Arabia thing change it at all? Or is this just sort of, no, they've always had a pay-per-view. Who cares where it is?
I kind of feel like anything that happens in Saudi Arabia is just sort of bizarro world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't fully buy into it as being the official storyline because I can't trust that it's what they would have done without the involvement of the Saudi government.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a weird, I don't know, like Marvel What If or something like that. It's a novelty. So that's like a pit stop or something. So it's kind of weird to have that on the alleged road to WrestleMania. As for the other complaints, I don't know. It doesn't sound like he enjoys the product very much.
Right. Good interpretation.
Thank you. That's why I'm here. Man, going to WrestleMania doesn't appeal to me at all for multiple reasons. The emailer wants to take a stance, you know, against WWE for kind of their booking and programming decisions, and those are valid points, and I would do it for other points, and that the show is way too long, and they play in way too big of arenas to have good seats be affordable, and it's not enjoyable. They're all valid points, and you could come at them from different angles.
Javier, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it really, I blame the whole Saudi deal because it's, you for the stuff we already talked about. It just it saps so much of the big matches, but at the same time, they end up feeling meaningless. Because, I mean, you could pretty much just cut whatever storyline they're going to tell between now, between Reigns and Goldberg, you could pretty much cut it out, and it's not going to really change the landscape of anything. And you could say the same thing about pretty much any of the matches they're going to have with the likely exception of the Elimination Chamber. And, you know, previous Saudi Arabia shows, you know, the entire show was like that. I think it was the last one and this one where they had, you know, they have like one thing that you need to watch. One storyline that's important, that's moving stuff forward. But everything on the card is not going to really matter. So, because, I mean, you know, Becky and Lita looks like it's going to be there. And they're already talking about how Becky's going to be the one at WrestleMania. So is there even a, you know, they're already telling us that Lita, Becky's not going to matter. So... It's almost like an entire house show with one match that you need to watch. But it's built big, and it's only a couple months away from WrestleMania. If it were, like, on the other side of the year, then, okay, fine, you could, you know, maybe get away with it. But, you know, before you just had Elimination Chamber, you had the Rumble. The Rumble was like a big tentpole of your pay-per-views. And then you had Elimination Chamber where you would, you know, the less important matches would be normally set for WrestleMania. Then you had Fastlane, which was like the most worthless pay-per-view, and just because you need to have a pay-per-view to just, you know, tie up loose, you know, some loose ends, and then you'd have WrestleMania. But now by putting, you know, this big, massive, you know, grandiose, you know, show in between that they want to make it feel like WrestleMania in between, it kills the momentum. For me, you know, this one more than the other Saudi shows, particularly because of how close it is to WrestleMania.
Mike, your thoughts?
I agree.
That works. All right, guys, we've passed 2 hours. We can wrap up there. Do you have anything else you want to add about the show, Mike?
No, I'm good.
All right, cool. Javier, how about you?
No, I mean, it's not turn off the TV bad at this point, but you know, it's because I was there around, you know, Christmas time. I was like, particularly Raw before the draft, you know, the draw had gotten that bad. Fortunately, Raw's gotten better, but SmackDown's gotten worse. So they kind of evened things out.
Yeah. And we got, you know, a handful of minutes of Los Lotharios, the New Day having good wrestling in the show. The show needed that match just to give us something more than, you know, 2 to 4 minutes of a match that didn't matter leading to a quick finish. And so we got 8-9 minutes minus a commercial. This is not a high compliment, but when a 9-minute match with a commercial in the middle is the highlight of the show wrestling wise, but at least there was some good action there. Although Cole, what a tag team match. It's like, it's not even at the 10-minute mark. You don't get to say that until you get to 10 minutes. But anyway, that's my closing thought. Thanks, Javier. Thanks, Mike. Great talking to you. How can people follow you on Twitter, Mike, by the way?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at The Mike Show 42. Wade, it's been fun. Javier, good to talk to you again.
Always good to talk to you, Mike.
Thanks, everyone. You can follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller, and you can follow our brand at PW Torch. Thanks to Zach Cadorn for covering for me on Monday Night After Raw and Wednesday Night After Dynamite. Check those shows out if you haven't yet. Also, Rich Van joined me on the Flagship earlier this week on our Blue Logo show. So if you haven't heard our Flagship discussion yet, go do that. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app and subscribe to the Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. In addition to this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show with the red logo. And that awaits you. All right. Thanks, everybody. Until next time, Wade Keller, on behalf of Mike, signing off.